coldly. If I were you, Lord Chappell, I would pretend I never saw anything.
Yes, no doubt, Chappell said. But you are not me.
Dainty Bieberveld ran up from behind the tent out of breath and sweaty. On seeing Chappell, he stopped, began to whistle, held his hands behind his back, and pretended to be admiring the roof of the granary. Chappell went over and stood by Geralt, very close. The Witcher did not move, but only narrowed his eyes. For a moment, they looked at each other, and then Chappell leaned over the bundle.
"Doo-doo,"
he said to Dandelion's strangely deformed cordovan boots sticking out of the rolled-up kilim.
"Copy Bieberveld, and quickly."
"What?"
Dainty yelled, stopping staring at the granary.
"What's that?"
"Be quiet," Chappell said. "Well, Doodoo, are things coming along?"
"I'm just..."
A muffled grunting issued from the kilim.
"I'm just... a moment."
The cordovan boots sticking out of the kilim stretched, became blurred, and changed into the halfling's bare, hairy feet.
"Get out, Doodoo," Chappell said. "And you, Dainty, be quiet. All halflings look the same, don't they?"
Dainty mumbled something indistinctly. Geralt, eyes still narrowed, looked at Chappell suspiciously. The minister, however, straightened up and looked all around, and all that remained of any gawkers who were still in the vicinity was the clacking of wooden clogs dying away in the distance. The second Dainty Bieberveld scrambled and rolled out of the bundle, sneezed, sat up and rubbed his eyes and nose. Dandelion perched himself on a trunk lying alongside and strummed away on his lute with an expression of moderate interest on his face.
"Who do you think that is, Dainty?" Chappell asked mildly. "Very similar to you, don't you think?" "He's my cousin,"
the halfling shot back and grinned.
"A close relative. Doodoo Bieberveld of Knockgrass Meadow, an astute businessman. I've actually just decided..."
"Yes, Dainty?"
"I've decided to appoint him my factor in Novigrad. What do you say to that, cousin?" "Oh, thank you, cousin."
His close relative, the pride of the Bieberveld clan and an astute businessman, smiled broadly. Chappell also smiled.
"Has your dream about life in the city come true?" Geralt muttered. "What do you see in this city, Doodoo? And you, Chappell?"
"Had you lived on the moors," Chappell muttered back, "and eaten roots, got soaked and frozen, you'd know. We also deserve something from life, Geralt. We aren't inferior to you."
"Very true," Geralt nodded. "You aren't. Perhaps it even happens that you're better. What happened to the real Chappell?"
"Popped his clogs," the second Chappell whispered. 2 months ago now. Apoplexy. May the earth lie lightly on him, and may the eternal fire light his way. I happened to be in the vicinity. No one noticed. Geralt, you aren't going to..."
"What didn't anyone notice?"
the Witcher asked, with an inscrutable expression.
"Thank you," Chappell muttered.
"Are there more of you?"
"Is it important?"
"No,"
agreed the Witcher.
"It isn't."
A 2-cubit-tall figure in a green cap and spotted coney fur coat dashed out from behind the wagons and stalls and trotted over.
"Mr. Bieberveld,"
the gnome panted and stammered, looking around and sweeping his eyes from one halfling to the other.
"I presume, Shorty," Dainty said, "that you have a matter for my cousin Doodoo Bieberveld to deal with? Speak. Speak, that is him."
"Sorrel reports that everything has gone,"
the gnome said, and smiled broadly, showing small pointed teeth.
"For 4 crowns apiece."
"I think I know what it's about," Dainty said. "Pity Vivaldi's not here. You would have calculated the profit in no time."
"If I may, cousin,"
Teleco, Lungravinkler taught, penstock for short, Doodoo to his close friends and for the whole of Novigrad, a member of the large Bieberveld family, spoke up.
"If I may, I'll calculate it. I have an infallible memory for figures, as well as for other things."
"By all means."
Dainty gave a bow.
"By all means, cousin."
"The costs,"
the Doppler frowned, "were low.
18 for the oil, 8.50 for the cod liver oil. Altogether, including the string, 45 crowns. Takings, 600 at 4 crowns, makes 2,400. No commission, because there weren't any middlemen.
Please, do not forget about the tax, the second chapel reminded him. Please do not forget that standing before you is a representative of the city authorities and the temple, who treats his duties gravely and conscientiously.
It's exempt from tax,
Dudu Bibavelt declared,
because it was sold in a sacred cause.
Hey?
The cod liver oil, wax and oil, dyed with a little cochineal,
the Doppler explained,
need only be poured into earthenware bowls with a piece of string dipped into it. The string, when lit, gives a beautiful red flame, which burns for a long time and doesn't smell. The eternal fire. The priests needed vigil lights for the altars of the eternal fire. Now they don't need them.
Bloody hell, Chapel muttered. You're right. They needed vigil lights.
Dudu, you're brilliant.
I take after my mother,
Tellico said modestly.
Yes, indeed, the spitting image of his mother, Dainty agreed. Just look into those intelligent eyes. Begonia Bibavelt, my darling aunt, as I live and breathe.
Geralt, Dandelion groaned, he's earned more in 3 days than I've earned in my whole life by singing.
In your place, the Witcher said gravely, I quit singing and take up commerce. Ask him, he may take you on as an apprentice.
Witcher,
Tellico said, tugging him by the sleeve.
Tell me how I could repay you.
22 crowns.
What?
For a new jacket. Look what's left of mine.
Do you know what? Dandelion suddenly yelled. Let's all go to the house of ill repute, to Passiflora. The Bibavelts are paying.
Do they admit halflings?
Dainty asked with concern.
Just let them try not to.
Chapel put on a menacing expression.
Just let them try, and I'll accuse that entire bordello of heresy.
Right, Dandelion called. Very satisfactory. Geralt, are you coming?
The Witcher laughed softly.
Do you know what, Dandelion? He said. I'll come with pleasure.
A Little Sacrifice. Chapter 1. The mermaid emerged to waist height from the water and splashed her hands violently and hard against the surface. Geralt saw that she had gorgeous, utterly perfect breasts. Only the colour spoiled the effect. The nipples were dark green, and the areoli around them were only a little lighter. Nimbly aligning herself with an approaching wave, the mermaid arched gracefully, shook her wet willow-green hair, and sang melodiously.
What?
The Duke leaned over the side of the cog.
What is she saying?
She's declining, Geralt said. She says she doesn't want to.
Have you explained that I love her? That I can't imagine life without her? That I want to wed her? Only her, no other.
Yes, I have.
And?
And nothing.
Say it again.
The Witcher touched his lips and produced a quavering warble. Struggling to find the words and the intonation, he began to translate the Duke's avowal. The mermaid, lying back on the water, interrupted.
Don't translate. Don't tire yourself, she sang. I understand. When he says he loves me, he always puts on such a foolish expression. Did he say anything definite?
Not really.
Pity,
the mermaid said, before she flapped in the water and dived under, flexing her tail powerfully and making the sea foam with her notched flukes, which resembled the tail of a mullet.
What? What did she say?
The Duke asked.
That it's a shame.
What's a shame? What does she mean, shame?
I'd say she turned you down.
Nobody refuses me,
the Duke roared, denying the obvious facts.
My lord,
the skipper of the cog muttered, walking over to them.
The nets are ready. All we need do is cast them and she will be yours.
I wouldn't advise it,
Geralt said softly.
She's not alone. There are more of them beneath the waves, and there may be a kraken deeper down there.
The skipper quaked, blanched, and seized his backside with both hands in a nonsensical gesture.
A kraken?
Yes, a kraken, the Witcher repeated.
I don't advise fooling around with nets. All she need do is scream, and all that'll be left of this tub will be a few floating planks that'll drown us like kittens.
Besides, Aglaval, you should decide whether you want to wed her or catch her in a net and keep her in a barrel.
I love her, Aglaval said firmly. I want her for my wife. But for that, she must have legs and not a scaly tail. And it's feasible, since I bought a magical elixir with a full guarantee for 2 pounds of exquisite pearls. After drinking it, she'll grow legs. She'll just suffer a little for 3 days, no more. Call her, Witcher. Tell her again.
I've already told her twice. She said absolutely no. She doesn't consent.
But she added that she knows a witch, a sea witch, who is prepared to cast a spell to turn your legs into a handsome tail, painlessly.
She must be insane. She thinks I would have a fishy tail. Not a chance. Call her, Geralt.
The Witcher leaned far out over the side. The water in the boat's shadow was green and seemed as thick as jelly. He did not have to call. The mermaid suddenly shot out above the surface in a fountain of water. For a moment, she literally stood on her tail, then dived down into the waves and turned on her back, revealing her attributes in all their glory. Geralt swallowed.
Hey, she sang, will this take much longer? My skin's getting chapped from the sun. White hair, ask him if he consents.
He does not, the Witcher sang back. She nuts, understand, he cannot have a tail, cannot live beneath the water. You can breathe air, but he cannot breathe underwater.
I knew it, the mermaid screamed shrilly. I knew it. Excuses, foolish, naive excuses, not a bit of sacrifice. Whoever loves makes sacrifices. I made sacrifices for him every day. I hauled myself out onto the rocks for him. I wore out the scales on my bottom, frayed my fins. I caught coals for him, and he will not sacrifice those 2 hideous pegs for me. Love doesn't just mean taking. One also has to be able to give up things to make sacrifices. Tell him that.
She and that, Geralt called. Don't you understand? He cannot survive in the water.
I don't accept stupid excuses. I like him too, and want to have his fry. But how can I, if he doesn't want to be a spawner? Where should I deposit my eggs, huh? In his cap?
What is she saying? The Duke yelled. Geralt, I didn't bring you here to chat with her.
She's digging her heels in. She's angry.
Cast those nets, Aglaval roared. I'll keep her in a pool for a month, and then she'll... Shove it, the skipper yelled back, demonstrating what he was to shove with his middle finger.
There might be a kraken beneath us. Ever seen a kraken, my lord? Hop into the water, if that is your will, and catch her with your hands. I'm not getting involved. I make my living by fishing from this cog.
You make your living by my good will, you scoundrel. Cast your net, or I'll order you strung up. Kiss a dog's arse. I'm in charge on this cog.
Be quiet, both of you,
Geralt shouted irately. She's saying something. It's a difficult dialect. I need to concentrate.
I've had enough,
Chinatz yelled melodiously.
I'm hungry. Well, Whitehair, he must decide at once. Tell him just one thing. I will not be made a laughingstock of any longer or associate with him if he's going to look like a four-armed starfish. Tell him I have girlfriends who are much better at those frolics he was suggesting on the rocks, but I consider them immature games fit for children before they shed their scales. I'm a normal, healthy mermaid.
Sheenats!
Don't interrupt. I haven't finished yet. I'm healthy, normal, and ripe for spawning, and if he really desires me, he must have a tail, fins, and everything a normal merman has. Otherwise, I don't want to know him.
Geralt translated quickly, trying not to be vulgar. He was not very successful. The Duke flushed and swore foully.
The brazen hussy, he yelled. The frigid mackerel. Let her find herself a cod.
What did he say?
Sheenats asked curiously, swimming over.
that he doesn't want a tail.
Then tell him to dry up.
What did she say?
She told you, the Witcher translated, to go drown yourself.
Chapter 2.
Ah, well, Dandelion said. Pity I couldn't sail with you. But what can I do? Sailing makes me puke like nobody's business. But you know what? I've never spoken to a mermaid. It's a shame, damn it.
I know you, Geralt said, fastening his saddlebags. You'll write a ballad anyway.
Well, never fear. I already have the first stanzas. In my ballad, the mermaid will sacrifice herself for the Duke. She'll exchange her fishtail for slender legs, but will pay for it by losing her voice. The Duke will betray her, abandon her, and then she'll perish from grief and turn into foam when the first rays of sunshine... Who'd believe such rot?
It doesn't matter, Dandelion snorted. Ballads aren't written to be believed. They're written to move their audience. But why am I talking to you about this when you know bugger all about it? You'd better tell me how much Aglaval paid you.
He didn't pay me anything. He claimed I'd failed to carry out the task, that he'd expected something else, and he pays for results, not good intentions.
Dandelion shook his head, took off his bonnet, and looked at the Witcher with a forlorn grimace on his mouth.
You mean we still don't have any money?
So it would seem.
Dandelion made an even more forlorn face.
It's all my fault, he moaned. I'm to blame for it all, Geralt. Are you angry at me?
No, the Witcher wasn't angry at Dandelion. Not at all.
There was no doubt Dandelion was to blame for what had befallen them. He had insisted they went to the fair at Four Maples. Organizing festivities, the poet argued, satisfied people's profound and natural needs. From time to time, the bard maintained, a chap has to meet other people in a place where he can have a laugh and a sing-song, gorge himself on kebabs and pierogies, drink beer, listen to music, and squeeze a girl as he swung her around in the dance. If every chap wanted to satisfy those needs, Dandelion argued, individually, periodically and randomly, an indescribable mess would arise. For that reason, holidays and festivities were invented. And, since holidays and festivities exist, a chap ought to frequent them. Geralt did not challenge this, although taking part in festivities occupied a very low position on the list of his own profound and natural needs. Nonetheless, he agreed to accompany Dandelion, for he was counting on obtaining information from the gathered concentration of people about a possible mission or job. He'd had no work for a long time, and his cash reserves had shrunk alarmingly. The Witcher did not bear Dandelion a grudge for provoking the rangers of the forest. He was not innocent either, for he could have intervened and held the bard back. He did not, however, for he could not stand the infamous guardians of the forest, known as the rangers, a volunteer force whose mission was to eradicate non-humans. It had annoyed him to hear their boasts about elves, spriggans and eerie wives bristling with arrows, butchered or hanged. Dandelion, though, who after travelling for some time with the Witcher had become convinced of his impunity from retaliation, had surpassed himself. Initially, the rangers had not reacted to his mockery, taunts or filthy suggestions, which aroused the thunderous laughter of the watching villagers. When, however, Dandelion sang a hastily composed obscene and abusive couplet, ending with the words, "If you want to be a nothing, be a ranger!" an argument and then a fierce mass punch-up broke out. The shed, serving as the dance hall, went up in smoke. Intervention came in the form of a squad of men belonging to Castellan Budibog, also known as the Empty-Headed, on whose estates lay Four Maples. The rangers, Dandelion and Geralt, were found jointly guilty of all the damage and offences, which included the seduction of a red-headed and mute girl, who was found in the bushes behind the barn following the incident, blushing and grinning foolishly, with her shift torn up to her armpits. Fortunately, Castellan Budibog knew Dandelion, so it ended with a fine being paid, which, nonetheless, ate up all the money they had. They also had to flee from Four Maples as fast as they could ride, because the rangers, who had been chased out of the village, were threatening revenge, and an entire squad of them, numbering over 40 men, was hunting Rosalkas in the neighbouring forests. Geralt did not have the slightest desire to be hit by one of the rangers' arrows, whose heads were barbed like harpoons and inflicted dreadful injuries. So they had to abandon their original plan, which had involved doing the rounds of the villages on the edge of the forest, where the Witcher had reasonable prospects of work. Instead,
They rode to Bremervoorde on the coast. Unfortunately, apart from the love affair between Duke Aglaval and the mermaid Sheernats, which offered small chances of success, the Witcher had failed to find a job. They had already sold Geralt's gold signet for food, and an Alexandrite brooch the troubadour had once been given as a souvenir by one of his numerous paramours. Things were tight. But no, the Witcher was not angry with Dandelion.
"No, Dandelion," he said, "I'm not angry with you."
Dandelion did not believe him, which was quite apparent by the fact that he kept quiet. Dandelion was seldom quiet. He patted his horse's neck and fished around in his saddlebags for the umpteenth time. Geralt knew he would not find anything there they could sell. The smell of food, borne on a breeze from a nearby tavern, was becoming unbearable.
"Master!" somebody shouted. "Hey! Master!"
"Yes," Geralt said, turning around.
A big-bellied, well-built man in felt boots and a heavy fur-lined wolfskin coat clambered out of a cart pulled by a pair of onagers, which had just stopped alongside.
"That is," the portly man said, embarrassed, walking over. "I didn't mean you, sir. I meant Master Dandelion. It is I."
The poet proudly sat up straight, adjusting his bonnet, bearing an egret feather.
"What is your need, my good man?"
"Begging your pardon," the portly man said,
"I am Teleri Drewhard, spice merchant and dean of our local guild. My son, Gaspar, has just plighted his troth to Dahlia, the daughter of Mestfin the cogskipper."
"Ha," Dandelion said, maintaining a haughty air.
"I offer my congratulations and extend my wishes of happiness to the betrothed couple. How may I be of help? Does it concern jus primae noctis? I never decline that. No. That is, you see, the betrothal banquet and ball are this evening. Since it got out that you, master, have come to Bremervoorde, my wife won't let up, just like a woman. Listen, she says, Teleri, we'll show everybody we aren't churls like them, that we stand for culture and art, that when we have a feast it's refined and not an excuse to get pissed and throw up. I says to her, silly moo, but we've already hired one bard, won't that suffice? And she says one is too few. Ho, ho, Master Dandelion, well I never, such a celebrity, that'll be one in the eye for our neighbours. Master, do us the honour. I prepare to give 25 talars as a gesture, naturally, to show my support for the arts."
"Do my ears deceive me?" Dandelion drawled. I am to be the second bard? An appendix to some other musician? I have not sunk so low, my dear sir, as to accompany somebody."
Drewhard blushed.
"Forgive me, master," he gibbered. "That isn't what I meant. It was my wife. Forgive me. Do us the honour."
"Dandelion," Geralt hissed softly, "don't put on airs. We need those few pennies."
"Don't try to teach me," the poet yelled. "Me putting on airs? Me? Look at him. What should I say about you, who rejects a lucrative proposition every other day? You won't kill hirkas because they're an endangered species, or mecopterans because they're harmless, or night spirits because they're sweet, or dragons because your code forbids it. I, just imagine it, also have my self-respect. I also have a code."
"Dandelion, please, do it for me. A little sacrifice, friend, nothing more. I swear I won't turn my nose up at the next job that comes along. Come on, Dandelion."
The troubadour looked down at the ground and scratched his chin, which was covered in soft, fair bristles. Drewhard, mouth gaping, moved closer.
"Master, do us this honour. My wife won't forgive me if I don't invite you. Now then, I'll make it 30.
35,
Dandelion said firmly. Geralt smiled and hopefully breathed in the scent of food wafting from the tavern.
"Agreed, master, agreed,"
Teleri Drewhard said quickly. So quickly, it was evident he would have given 40 had the need arisen.
"And now, my home, if you desire to groom yourself and rest, is your home. And you, sir, what do they call you?"
"Geralt of Rivia."
"Then I invite you too, sir, of course, for a bite to eat and something to drink."
"Certainly,"
"With pleasure," Dandelion said. "Show us the way, my dear sir. And just between us, who is the other bard?"
"The Honourable Miss Essie Davin."
Chapter 3 Geralt rubbed a sleeve over the silver studs of his jacket and his belt buckle one more time, smoothed down his hair, which was held down with a clean headband, and polished his boots by rubbing one leg against the other. "Dandelion?" "Hmm?" The bard smoothed the egret feather pinned to his bonnet and straightened and pulled down his jerkin. The two of them had spent half the day cleaning their garments and tidying them up. "What, Geralt?"
"Behave in such a way as they throw us out after supper and not before."
"You must be joking," the poet said indignantly. "Watch your manners yourself. Shall we go in?"
"We shall. Do you hear? Somebody singing. A woman.
Have you only just noticed? That's Essie Davin, known as Little Eye. What? Have you never met a female troubadour?"
"True. I forgot you steer clear of places where art flourishes.
Little Eye is a gifted poet and singer, though not without her flaws, among which impertinence, so I hear, is not the least. What she is singing now happens to be one of my ballads. She will soon hear a piece of my mind which will make that little eye of hers water."
"Dandelion, have mercy. They'll throw us out."
"Don't interfere. These are professional issues. Let's go in."
"Dandelion?"
"Huh?"
"Why Little Eye?"
"You'll see." The banquet was being held in a huge storeroom, emptied of barrels of herrings and cod liver oil. The smell had been killed, though not entirely, by hanging up bunches of mistletoe and heather decorated with coloured ribbons wherever possible. Here and there, as is customary, were also hung plats of garlic meant to frighten off vampires. The tables and benches, which had been pushed towards the walls, had been covered with white linen, and in a corner there was a large makeshift hearth and spit. It was crowded, but not noisy. More than 4 dozen people of various estates and professions, not to mention the pimply youth and his snub-nosed fiancée, with her eyes fixed on her husband-to-be, were listening reverentially to a sonorous and melodious ballad, sung by a young woman in a demure blue frock, sitting on a platform with a lute resting on her knee. The woman could not have been older than 18 and was very slim. Her long, luxuriant hair was the colour of dark gold. They entered as the girl finished the song and thanked the audience for the thunderous applause with a nod of her head, which shook her hair gently.
"Greetings, master, greetings."
Drowhard, dressed in his best clothes, leapt briskly over to them and pulled them towards the centre of the storeroom.
Greetings to you, Gerard, sir. I am honoured. Yes, come here. Noble ladies, noble gentlemen, here is our honoured guest, who gave us this honour and honoured us. Master Dandelion, the celebrated singer and poet, has honoured us with his great honour. Thus honoured, we...
Cheers and applause resounded, and just in time, for it was looking as though Drowhard would honour and stammer himself to death. Dandelion, blushing with pride, assumed a superior air and bowed carelessly, then waved a hand at a row of girls sitting on a long bench like hens on a roost, being chaperoned by older matrons. The girls were sitting stiffly, giving the impression they had been stuck to the bench with carpenter's glue or some other powerful adhesive. Without exception, they were holding their hands on tightly clenched knees, and their mouths were half open.
"And presently," Drowhard called, "come forth, help yourself to beer, fellows, and to the victuals. Prithee, prithee, avail yourselves."
The girl in the blue dress forced her way through the crowd, which had crashed onto the food-laden tables like a sea wave.
"Greetings, Dandelion," she said.
Geralt considered the expression, eyes like stars, banal and hackneyed, particularly since he had begun travelling with Dandelion, as the troubadour was inclined to throw that compliment about freely, usually, indeed, undeservedly. However, with regard to Essie Davin, even somebody as little susceptible to poetry as the Witcher had to concede the aptness of her nickname, for in her agreeable and pretty but otherwise unremarkable little face shone a huge, beautiful, shining dark blue eye which riveted the gaze. Essie Davin's other eye was largely covered and obscured by a golden curl which fell onto her cheek. From time to time, Essie flung the curl away with a toss of her head or a puff,
at which point it turned out that Little Eye's other Little Eye was in every way the equal of the first.
"Greetings, Little Eye," Dandelion said, grimacing. "That was a pretty ballad you just sang. You've improved your repertoire considerably. I've always maintained that if one is incapable of writing poetry oneself, one should borrow other people's. Have you borrowed many of them?"
"A few,"
Essie Doven retorted at once and smiled, revealing little white teeth.
"Two or three. I wanted to use more, but it wasn't possible. Dreadful gibberish, and the tunes, though pleasant and unpretentious in their simplicity, not to say primitivism, are not what my audiences expect. Have you written anything new, Dandelion? I don't seem to be aware of it."
"Small wonder," the bard sighed. "I sing my ballads in places to which only the gifted and renowned are invited, and you don't frequent such locations after all."
Essie blushed slightly and blew the lock of hair aside.
"Very true," she said. "I don't frequent bordellos, as the atmosphere depresses me. I sympathise with you that you have to sing in places like that, but, well, that's the way it is. If one has no talent, one can't choose one's audiences."
Now Dandelion visibly blushed. Little Eye, however, laughed joyously, flung an arm around his neck all of a sudden, and kissed him on the cheek. The Witcher was taken aback, but not too greatly. A professional colleague of Dandelion's could not, indeed, differ much from him in terms of predictability.
"Dandelion, you old bugger!"
Essie said, still hugging the bard's neck.
"I'm glad to see you again, in good health and in full possession of your mental faculties."
"Pshaw, Poppet!"
Dandelion seized the girl around the waist, picked her up and spun her around so that her dress billowed around her.
"You were magnificent, by the gods! I haven't heard such marvellous spitefulness for ages. You bicker even more captivatingly than you sing, and you look simply stunning."
"I've asked you so many times," Essie said, blowing her lock of hair away and glancing at Geralt, "not to call me Poppet, Dandelion. Besides, I think it's high time you introduced me to your companion. I see he doesn't belong to our guild."
"Safe as so gods," the troubadour laughed. "He, Poppet, has no voice or ear, and can only rhyme rear with beer. This is Geralt of Rivia, a member of the Guild of Witchers. Come closer, Geralt, and kiss Little Eye's hand."
The Witcher approached, not really knowing what to do. One usually only kissed ladies of the rank of Duchess and higher on the hand, or the ring, and one was supposed to kneel. Regarding women of lower standing, that gesture, here in the South, was considered erotically unambiguous, and as such, tended to be reserved only for close couples. Little Eye dispelled his doubts, however, by willingly holding her hand out high with the fingers facing downwards. He grasped it clumsily and feigned a kiss. Essie, her beautiful eye still popping out of her head, blushed.
"Geralt of Rivia," she said. "What company you keep, Dandelion?"
"It is an honour for me," the Witcher muttered, aware he was rivaling Drowhard in eloquence. "Madam..."
"Damn it!" Dandelion snorted. "Don't abash Little Eye with all that stammering and titling. She's Essie, he's Geralt. End of introductions. Let's get to the point, Poppet."
"If you call me Poppet once more, you'll get a slap."
"What point do we have to get to?"
"We have to agree on how we're going to sing. I suggest one after the other, a few ballads each, for the effect. Of course, singing our own ballads."
"Suits me."
"How much is Drowhard paying you?"
"None of your business." "Who goes first?"
"You."
"Agreed." "Hey, look who's joined us. The most noble Duke of Aglaval. He's just coming in, look."
"Well, well," Dandelion said gleefully. "The audience is going up market. Although... on the other hand, we oughtn't to count on him. He's a skinflint. Geralt can confirm it. The local duke bloody hates paying. He hires, admittedly, but he's not so good at paying."
"I've heard a few things about him."
Essie, looking at Geralt, tossed the lock of hair back from her cheek.
"They were talking about it in the harbour and by the jetty. The famous Sheenats, right?"
Aglaval responded to the deep bows of the two rows by the door with a brief nod, and then almost immediately went over to Drowhard and drew him away into a corner, giving a sign that he was not expecting deference or ceremony in the centre of the storehouse. Geralt watched them out of the corner of his eye. They spoke softly, but it was apparent that they were both agitated. Drowhard kept wiping his forehead with a sleeve, shaking his head and scratching his neck. He was asking questions which the Duke, surly and dour, was responding to by shrugging.
"His Grace," Essie said quietly, moving closer to Geralt, "looks preoccupied. Affairs of the heart again? The misunderstanding from earlier today with his famous mermaid, hey, Witcher?"
"Perhaps," Geralt answered, looking askance at the poet, astonished and strangely annoyed by her question. "Well, everybody has some personal problems. However, not everybody likes them to be sung about from the rooftops." Little Eye blanched slightly, blew away her lock of hair, and looked at him defiantly.
"By saying that, did you mean to offend or only tease me?"
"Neither one nor the other. I merely wanted to forestall further questions about the problems between Aglaval and the mermaid, questions I do not feel entitled to answer."
"I understand." Essie Darwin's gorgeous eye narrowed slightly. "I won't burden you with a similar dilemma. I shall not ask you any of the questions I meant to ask, and which, if I'm to be frank, I treated only as a prelude and invitation to a pleasant conversation." "Very well. That conversation will not come to pass, then. And you need fear not that the content will be sung from some rooftop. It has been my pleasure."
She turned on her heel and walked off towards the tables, where she was immediately greeted with respect. Dandelion shifted his weight from foot to foot and coughed tellingly.
"I wouldn't say that was exquisitely courteous of you, Geralt."
"It came out wrongly," the Witcher agreed. "I hurt her, quite unintentionally. Perhaps I should follow her and apologize."
"Drop it," the bard said, and added aphoristically, "there is never a second opportunity to make a first impression. Come on, let's have a beer instead."
They did not make it to the beer. Drowhard pushed his way through a garrulous group of merchants.
"Gerard, sir," he said, "please step this way. His Grace would like to talk to you."
"Very well."
"Geralt?"
Dandelion seized him by the sleeve.
"Don't forget."
"Forget what?"
"You promised to agree to any task without complaint.
I shall hold you to it."
"What was it you said? A little sacrifice?"
"Very well, Dandelion."
He went off with Drowhard into the corner of the storeroom, away from the guests. Aglaval was sitting at a low table. He was accompanied by a colourfully dressed, weather-beaten man with a short, black beard, whom Geralt had not noticed earlier.
"We meet again, Witcher," the Duke said, "although this morning I swore I didn't want to see you again. But I do not have another Witcher to hand, so you will have to do. Meet Zelest, my bailiff and pearl-diving steward. Speak, Zelest."
"This morning," said the weather-beaten individual in a low voice, "we planned to go diving outside the usual grounds. One boat went further westwards, beyond the headland, towards the Dragon's Fangs."
"The Dragon's Fangs," Aglaval cut in, "are two volcanic reefs at the end of the headland. They can be seen from our coast."
"Aye," Zelest confirmed. "People don't usually sail there, for there are whirlpools and rocks. It's dangerous to dive there. But there's fewer and fewer pearls by the coast." "Aye. One boat went there. A crew of 7 souls, 2 sailors and 5 divers, including one woman. When they hadn't returned by the eventide, we began to fret, although the sea was calm, as if oil had been poured on it. I sent a few swift skiffs there, and we soon found the boat drifting on the sea. There was no one in it, not a living soul. Vanished into thin air. We know not what happened, but there must have been fighting there, a veritable massacre. There were signs."
"What signs?"
The Witcher squinted.
"Well, the whole deck was spattered in blood."
Drowhard hissed and looked around anxiously. Zelest lowered his voice.
"It was as I said," he repeated, clenching his jaw. "The boat was spattered in gore, length and breadth. No question but a veritable massacre took place on board. Something killed those people. They say it was a sea monster. No doubt a sea monster."
"Not pirates?" asked Geralt softly. "Or pearl diving competition? Do you rule out a normal knife fight?"
"We do," said the Duke. "There are no pirates here, no competition, and knife fights don't result in everybody to the last man disappearing."
"No, Geralt, Zelest is right. It was a sea monster and nothing else. Listen, now no one dares to go to sea, not even to the nearby and familiar fishing grounds.
The people are scared stiff and the harbour is paralysed. Even the cogs and galleys aren't setting out. Do you see, Witcher?
I see, Geralt nodded. Who will show me this place?
Ha! Aglaval placed a hand on the table and drummed his fingers. I like that. That's Witcher talk, getting to the point at once, without unnecessary chatter. Yes, I like that. Do you see, Drowhard? I told you, a hungry Witcher is a good Witcher. Well, Geralt, after all, were it not for your musical companion, you would have gone to bed without your supper again. My information is correct, is it not? Drowhard lowered his head. Zeleste stared vacantly ahead.
Who'll show me the place? Geralt repeated, looking coldly at Aglaval.
Zeleste, said the Duke, his smile fading. Zeleste will show you the dragon's fangs and the route to them. When will you start work?
First thing tomorrow morning. Be at the harbour, Mr. Zeleste.
Very well, Master Witcher. Excellent. The Duke rubbed his hands and smiled mockingly again. Geralt, I'm relying on you to do better with this monster than you did with the Sheenat situation. I really am. Aha, one more thing. I forbid any gossiping about this incident. I don't want any more panic than we already have on our hands. Do you understand, Drowhard? I'll order your tongue torn out if you breathe a word.
I understand, Your Grace.
Good, Aglaval said, getting up. Then I shall go. I shall not interfere with the ball, nor provoke any rumours. Farewell, Drowhard. Wish the betrothed couple happiness on my behalf.
My thanks, Duke.
Essie Darvin, who was sitting on a low stool surrounded by a dense crowd of listeners, was singing a melodious and wistful ballad about the woeful fate of a betrayed lover. Dandelion, leaning against a post, was muttering something under his breath and counting bars and syllables on his fingers. Well, he asked, do you have a job, Geralt?
Yes, the Witcher answered, not going into details, which in any case did not concern the bard.
I told you I smelt a rat and money. Good, very good. I'll make some money, you will too. We'll be able to afford to revel. We'll go to Sidaris in time for the Grape Harvest Festival. And now, if you'll excuse me, I've spotted something interesting on the bench over there. Geralt followed the poet's gaze, but aside from about a dozen girls with half-open mouths, he saw nothing interesting. Dandelion pulled down his jerkin, set his bonnet over his right ear, and approached the bench in long, swinging strides. Having passed the matrons guarding the maidens with a deft flanking manoeuvre, he began his customary ritual of flashing a broad smile. Essie Darvin finished her ballad, and was rewarded with applause, a small purse, and a large bouquet of pretty, though somewhat withered, chrysanthemums. The Witcher circulated among the guests, looking for an opportunity to finally occupy a seat at the table, which was laden with victuals. He gazed longingly at the rapidly vanishing pickled herrings, stuffed cabbage leaves, boiled cod heads and mutton chops, at the rings of sausage and capons being torn into pieces, and the smoked salmon and hams being chopped up with knives. The problem was that there were no vacant seats at the table. The maidens and matrons, somewhat livened up, surrounded Dandelion, calling squeakily for a performance. Dandelion smiled falsely and made excuses, ineffectually feigning modesty. Geralt, overcoming his embarrassment, virtually forced his way to the table. An elderly gentleman, smelling strongly of vinegar, moved aside, surprisingly courteously and willingly, almost knocking off several guests sitting alongside him. Geralt got down to eating without delay and, in a flash, had cleared the only dish he could reach. The gentleman, smelling of vinegar, passed him another. In gratitude, the Witcher listened attentively to the elderly gentleman's long tirade concerning the present times and the youth of today. The elderly gentleman stubbornly described sexual freedom as laxity, so Geralt had some difficulty keeping a straight face. Essie stood by the wall beneath bunches of mistletoe, alone, tuning her lute. The Witcher saw a young man in a brocaded waisted caftan approaching and saying something to the poet, smiling wanly the while. Essie looked at the young man, her pretty mouth sneering slightly, and said several quick words. The young man cowered and walked hurriedly away, and his ears, as red as beetroots, glowed in the semi-darkness for a long time afterwards.
"Abomination, shame, and disgrace," the elderly gentleman, smelling of vinegar, continued. "One enormous laxity, sir."
"Indeed."
Geralt nodded tentatively, wiping his plate with a hunk of bread.
"May I request silence, noble ladies, noble lords?" Drowhard called, walking into the middle of the room. "The celebrated master Dandelion, in spite of being a little bodily indisposed and weary, shall now sing for us his celebrated ballad about Queen Marianne and the Black Raven. He shall do it at the urgent plea of Miss Faverka, the miller's daughter, whom, he said, he may not refuse."
Miss Faverka, one of the less comely girls on the bench, became beautified in the blink of an eye. Uproar and applause erupted, drowning out further laxity from the elderly gentleman smelling of vinegar. Dandelion waited for total silence, played a striking prelude on his lute, after which he began to sing without taking his eyes off Miss Faverka, who was growing more beautiful with each verse. Indeed, Geralt thought, that horsen is more effective than all the magical oils and creams Yennefer sells in her little shop in Vengerberg. He saw Essie steal behind the crowded semicircle of Dandelion's audience and cautiously vanish through the door to the terrace. Driven by a strange impulse, he slipped nimbly out from behind the table and followed her. She stood, leaning forward, resting her elbows on the railing of the jetty, head drawn into her delicate, upraised shoulders. She was gazing at the rippling sea, glistening from the light of the moon and the fires burning in the harbour. A board creaked beneath Geralt's foot. Essie straightened up.
"I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't mean to disturb you," he said stiffly,
searching for that sudden grimace on her lips to which she had treated the young man in brocade a moment earlier.
"You aren't disturbing me," she replied,
smiling and tossing back her lock of hair.
"I'm not seeking solitude here, but fresh air. Was all that smoke and airlessness bothering you too?"
"A little. But I'm more bothered by knowing that I offended you. I came here to apologise, Essie, to try to regain the chance of a pleasant conversation."
"You deserve my apology," she said, pressing her hands down on the railing. "I reacted too impetuously. I always react too impetuously. I don't know how to control myself. Excuse me and give me another chance, for a conversation."
He approached and leaned on the railing beside her. He felt the warmth emanating from her and the faint scent of verbena. He liked the scent of verbena, although the scent of verbena was not the scent of lilac and gooseberry.
"What do you connect with the sea, Geralt?"
she asked suddenly.
"Unease," he answered, almost without thinking.
"Interesting. And you seem so calm and composed."
"I didn't say I feel unease. You asked for associations."
"Associations are the image of the soul. I know what I'm talking about. I'm a poet."
What do you associate with the sea, Essie?"
he asked quickly, to put an end to discussion about the unease he was feeling.
"With constant movement," she answered after a pause. "With change, and with riddles, with mystery, with something I cannot grasp, which I might be able to describe in a thousand different ways, in a thousand poems, never actually reaching the core, the heart of the matter. Yes, that's it."
"And so," he said, feeling the verbena affecting him more and more strongly, "what you feel is also unease, and you seem so calm and composed."
She turned towards him, tossing back her golden curl and fixing her gorgeous eyes on him.
"I'm not calm or composed, Geralt."
It happened suddenly, utterly unexpectedly. The movement he made, which was supposed to have been just a touch, a gentle touch of her arms, turned into a powerful grasp of both hands around her very slender waist, into a rapid, though not rough, pulling of her closer, and into a sudden, passionate contact of their bodies. Essie stiffened suddenly, straightened, bent her torso powerfully backwards, pressed her hands down on his firmly, as though she wanted to pull away and push his hands from her waist. But instead of that, she seized them tightly, tipped her head forward, parted her lips, and hesitated.
"Why? Why this?"
she whispered. Her eye was wide open. Her golden curl had fallen onto her cheek. Calmly and slowly, he tipped his head forward, brought his face closer, and suddenly and quickly pursed his lips into a kiss. Essie, however, even then, did not release his hands grasping her waist and still powerfully arched her back, avoiding bodily contact. Remaining like that, they turned around slowly as though in a dance. She kissed him eagerly, expertly, for a long time. Then she nimbly and effortlessly freed herself from his embrace, turned away, once again leaned on the railing, and drew her head into her shoulders. Geralt suddenly felt dreadfully, indescribably stupid. The feeling stopped him from approaching her, from putting an arm around her hunched back.
"Why?"
she asked coolly, without turning around.
"Why did you do that?"
She glanced at him out of the corner of her eye, and the Witcher suddenly understood he had made a mistake. He suddenly knew that insincerity, lies, pretense and bravado would lead him straight into a swamp, where only a springy, matted layer of grass and moss, liable to yield, tear or break at any moment, separated him from the abyss below.
"Why?"
she repeated. He did not answer.
"Are you looking for a woman for the night?"
He did not reply. Essie turned slowly and touched his arm.
"Let's go back in,"
she said easily. But he was not deceived by her manner, sensing how tense she was.
"Don't make that face. It was nothing. And the fact that I'm not looking for a man for tonight isn't your fault, is it?"
"Essie..."
"Let's go back, Geralt. Dandelion has played 3 encores. It's my turn. Come on. I'll sing."
She glanced at him strangely and blew her lock of hair away from her eye.
"I'll sing for you."
Chapter 4.
"Oh-ho," the Witcher said, feigning surprise. "So you're here. I thought you wouldn't be back tonight."
Dandelion locked the door with the hasp, hung up his lute and his bonnet with the egret's feather on a peg, took off his jerkin, brushed it down, and laid it on some sacks lying in the corner of the small room. Apart from the sacks, a wooden pail, and a huge palliasse stuffed with dried beanstalks, there was no furniture in the attic room. Even the candle stood on the floor in a hardened pool of wax. Drowhard admired Dandelion, but clearly not enough to give him the run of a chamber or even a box room.
"And why," asked Dandelion, removing his boots, "did you think I wouldn't be back tonight?"
"I thought..."
The Witcher lifted himself up on an elbow, crunching bean straw. "You'd go and sing serenades beneath the window of Miss Verwerke, at whom your tongue has been hanging out the whole evening, like a pointer at the sight of a bitch."
"Ha ha!" the bard laughed. "But you're so oafishly stupid. You didn't understand anything. Verwerke? I don't care about Verwerke. I simply wanted to stab Miss Acaretta with jealousy, as I shall make a pass at her tomorrow. Move over."
Dandelion collapsed on the palliasse and pulled the blanket off Geralt. Geralt, feeling a strange anger, turned his head towards the tiny window, through which, had it not been for some industrious spiders, he would have seen the starry sky.
"Why so huffy?" the poet asked. "Does it bother you that I make advances to girls? Since when? Perhaps you've become a druid and taken a vow of chastity. Or perhaps..."
"Don't go on. I'm tired. Have you not noticed that for the first time in 2 weeks we have a palliasse and a roof over our heads? Doesn't it gladden you that the rain won't be dripping on us in the wee small hours?"
"For me," Dandelion fantasized, "a palliasse without a girl isn't a palliasse. It's incomplete happiness. And what is incomplete happiness?"
Geralt groaned softly, as usual when Dandelion was assailed by nocturnal talkativeness.
"Incomplete happiness," the bard continued, engrossed in his own voice, "is like a kiss interrupted. Why are you grinding your teeth, if I may ask?"
"You're incredibly boring, Dandelion. Nothing but palliasses, girls, bums, tits, incomplete happiness, and kisses interrupted by dogs set on you by your lover's parents. Why, you clearly can't behave any differently. Clearly only easy lewdness, not to say uncritical promiscuity, allows you musicians to compose ballads, write poems and sing. That is clearly, write it down, the dark side of your talent."
He had said too much and had not cooled his voice sufficiently, and Dandelion saw through him effortlessly and unerringly.
"Aha," he said calmly. "Essie Darwin, also known as Little Eye. The alluring Little Eye of Little Eye fixed its gaze on the Witcher and caused confusion in the Witcher.
The Witcher behaved like a little schoolboy before a queen, and rather than blame himself, he is blaming her and searching for her dark side.
You're talking rubbish, Dandelion.
No, my dear. Essie made an impression on you. You can't hide it. I don't see anything wrong with that, actually. But beware, and don't make a mistake. She is not what you think. If her talent has its dark sides, they certainly aren't what you imagine.
I conjecture, said the Witcher, trying to control his voice, that you know her very well.
Quite well, but not in the way you think. Not like that.
Quite original for you, you'll admit.
You're stupid, the bard said, stretching and placing both hands under his neck. I've known Poppet almost since she was a child. To me, she's like, well, like a younger sister. So I repeat, don't make any silly mistakes about her. You'd be harming her greatly, because you also made an impression on her. Admit it, you desire her.
Even if I did, unlike you, I'm not accustomed to talking about it, Geralt said sharply. Or writing songs about it. I thank you for your words about her, because perhaps you have indeed saved me from a stupid mistake. But let that be an end to it. I regard the subject as exhausted.
Dandelion lay motionless for a moment, saying nothing. But Geralt knew him too well. I know, the poet said at last. Now I know everything.
You know fuck all, Dandelion.
Do you know what your problem is, Geralt? You think you're different. You flaunt your otherness, what you consider abnormal. You aggressively impose that abnormality on others, not understanding that for people who think clear-headedly, you're the most normal man under the sun, and they all wish that everybody was so normal. What of it that you have quicker reflexes than most, and vertical pupils in sunlight? That you can see in the dark like a cat? That you know a few spells? Big deal! I, my dear, once knew an innkeeper who could fart for 10 minutes without stopping, playing the tune to the psalm Greetus, Greetus, O Morning Star. Heedless of his, let's face it, unusual talent, that innkeeper was the most normal among the normal. He had a wife, children, and a grandmother, afflicted by palsy.
What does that have to do with Essie Davin? Could you explain?
Of course. You wrongfully thought, Geralt, that little eye was interested in you out of morbid, downright perverted curiosity, that she looks at you as though you were a queer fish, a two-headed calf or a salamander in a menagerie. And you immediately became annoyed, gave her a rude, undeserved reprimand at the first opportunity, struck back at a blow she hadn't dealt. I witnessed it, after all. I didn't witness the further course of events, of course, but I noticed your flight from the room and saw her glowing cheeks when you returned. Yes, Geralt, I'm alerting you to a mistake, and you have already made it. You wanted to take revenge on her for, in your opinion, her morbid curiosity. You decided to exploit that curiosity.
You're talking rubbish.
You tried, the bard continued, unmoved, to learn if it was possible to bed her in the hay, if she was curious to find out what it's like to make love with a misfit, with a witcher. Fortunately, Essie turned out to be smarter than you, and generously took pity on your stupidity, having understood its cause. I conclude this from the fact you did not return from the jetty with a fat lip.
Have you finished?
Yes, I have.
Good night, then.
I know why you're furious and gnashing your teeth.
No doubt. You know everything.
I know who warped you like that, who left you unable to understand a normal woman. Oh, but that Yennefer of yours was a troublemaker. I'm damned if I know what you see in her.
Drop it, Dandelion.
Do you really not prefer normal girls like Essie? What do sorceresses have that Essie doesn't? Age, perhaps? Little Eye may not be the youngest, but she's as old as she looks. And do you know what Yennefer once confessed to me after a few stiff drinks? She told me that the first time she did it with a man, it was exactly a year after the invention of the two-furrow plough.
You're lying. Yennefer loathes you like the plague and would never confide in you.
All right, I was lying, I confess.
You don't have to. I know you.
You only think you know me. Don't forget, I'm complicated by nature.
Dandelion.
The Witcher sighed, now genuinely tired.
You're a cynic, a lecher, a womanizer, and a liar.
and there's nothing, believe me, nothing complicated about that. Good night.
Good night, Geralt.
Chapter 5
You rise early, Essie.
The poet smiled.